Hello, I'm Father Ray Petrucci. Welcome to Thoughts for the Week. We are going to have a fascinating program today. Before we get into it, though, I would like to invite you, our listeners, to consider contacting us, letting us know your thoughts for the program. Maybe you have a particular topic or theme you'd like us to explore. You can reach us two different ways. First would be the traditional mail, putting a stamp on a letter and addressing it to Thoughts for the Week, Post Office Box 7466. That's Post Office Box 7466, Greenwich, Connecticut. And the zip code in Greenwich is 06836. That's 06836. If you're on the computer, you'd like to email us, do so at Clemens10@AOL.com. Let me spell that for you. That's Clemons, the number 10, at AOL.com. While you're on the computer, I invite you to go to our internet magazine, Spirituality for Today, and I hope you'll find some interesting articles and features. And also, you'll find our program, Thoughts for the Week. And if you'd like to go to that website, it is spirituality.org. That's spirituality.org. Well, first, duty at hand is to welcome my co-host, Mrs. Dorothy Riera. Dorothy, welcome.
Thank you, Father. Always a joy to be here.
And welcome our guest today. And this is Professor Michelle Loris. I'll let you know a little bit about her in just a second. But first, Professor, welcome.
Well, welcome, and thank you for having me. It's a real honor. Really pleased to be here. Thank you so much.
You're highly recommended by one of our highly admired guests, and so we're delighted to have you with us. Now, in introducing Professor Loris, keep in mind, listeners, wherever you may be in the country or perhaps online, that the focus is Sacred Heart University in Fairfield, Connecticut, and Professor Loris is the chair of the Department of Catholic Studies, a hint at our theme today. Also, professor of English and psychology, and finally, assistant dean in the College of Arts and Sciences, and she holds her doctorates in, I know, English
and psychology. Yes.
So, okay, well, welcome to Thoughts for the Week again, and we are going to begin the program by asking you maybe to respond to a book that you mentioned of Michael Buckley, a Jesuit, who wrote for the Catholic University as Promise, and that title, as Promise and Project, and the title certainly expresses what we're trying to, I think, talk about today in Catholic identity. So what I'd like to do is, as he spoke of Catholic identity, a mission to become, has it become mute, even disappearing under the secularization of these days? Or do you think that Buckley is correct about that rather ominous and kind of sad description?
It is. It certainly gives us pause, and we do need to think. And I think Buckley is somewhat correct. There's some evidence out there to show that he is correct. For example, I just came back from a day-long conference at Boston College, and the whole conference was on the state of Catholic higher education, and the panels on that conference were all discussing that very question: how does a Catholic university maintain its Catholic identity and deliver the Catholic intellectual tradition to its students? And a recent article in America Magazine was titled "The Call of Catholic Higher Education." The whole point of that article was the same thing: how do we maintain Catholic identity in our Catholic universities? Loyola University in Los Angeles is holding a major conference, "What Makes Catholic Universities Distinct?" There's a really interesting book by Mark Roche, who's from the University of Notre Dame. His book is called "Realizing the Distinctive University." And he says many Catholic universities have lost their distinctive Catholic mission. So there's some evidence out there that would suggest that Buckley is correct. We need to be paying attention to this. And I think I would agree with Buckley that some of this drift from mission and identity, if we can call it that, comes from a couple of things. One, I do think the secularization, or the forces of secularization that we're experiencing, in the culture worldwide. We see that fewer people are connected to an institutional church, institutional faith of any kind, and so we see that same growing trend of secularization among academics in the universities. You know, years ago, if you think about Notre Dame, Villanova, Fordham, Boston, they were headed by religious orders, and Emmanual College or Albertus Magnus, they were headed by religious orders, male or female, and so the hiring for mission, if you will, was right there. Now, we have fewer religious on our faculty. Now, I don't mean that a university has to be staffed just by religious. That's really not what I'm saying, because my own Sacred Heart University actually was founded to be a lay-staffed, lay-led institution. But I think that today Catholic institutions, they find it difficult when they want to hire for mission. I mean, we want to hire, first and foremost, the best intellectual and academic candidate we can get, and that's absolutely what we must do. But I think sometimes we neglect looking also for that candidate who's the best intellectual academic candidate, but who's also going to be able to engage the Catholic mission of the university, regardless of their own faith tradition. They don't have to be Catholic.
But also, across the country, the spirit of the universities has changed drastically in every way, shape, or form. Because even you go to Notre Dame, and for the election, the students boycotted the Vice President of the United States coming to the university. And my point is that the university was always a seat of learning, where ideas are able to come and you exchange them in very various ways. No matter what ideas are, what your philosophy is, that is what they were meant to be in the Middle Ages, a seat of learning.
Yeah,
now all that, the liberals all want it their way, and if you bring a guest and they don't agree with the guest, they boycott everything.
Well, so I wouldn't, yes, there is more politicizing in that regard, but I think that I wouldn't just say the liberals or the conservatives. I think, unfortunately, that is part of the zeitgeist, the energy of our country today. But a place, like Sacred Heart, I mean, we are open to, in fact, you'll see these posters plastered all over the university. People of all political persuasions, all religious identities, all racial identities, ethnic identities are welcome here. This is your home. And really, I agree with you. The university should be an open place where people come and have open discourse, open discussion. And that's one of the things that I'll talk about later that we try to promote in our CIT seminars.
But following Dorothy's thought, though, do you find in many universities or trends in universities just that she was beginning to talk about, and that was a university not so much in pursuit of truth as in pursuit of affirming, adhering, and promoting a particular ideology? Have universities become more...
I really don't know. So it's an interesting thing that you're talking about, and I think, all right, so I think one of the things that Catholic universities are challenged by is this. There is this kind of view of the world in this sort of postmodern era in which we live, that it has thinking that is more, there isn't an innate order, meaning, or purpose, or even any sense of ultimacy in the world, right? So one part of the thinking is really, maybe we call it perspectivism, is that all knowledge, all experience of reality is based on my own subjective perception of what truth or reality are in and of themselves. And so reality or truth are made up simply of the multiple perspectives of truth and reality. It's not, there isn't a sense of an underlying objective foundation of truth or morality. And that does come, that does create sort of a politicizing.
It's sort of a might makes right. You can see how violent so many of the protests become.
Yeah, I don't know if it leads to might makes right, but it does lead to sort of a political partisanship about my point of view, my perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And I think another thing that Catholic universities are facing, is so there's that one thought, which is really contrary to Catholic thought, right?
Mm-hmm.
If everything is subjective and relativistic and dependent on perspective, mm-hmm. that's not sort of the origin of Catholic thought. And another part is that we look at today is that human experience can be explained simply through, let's say, genes or brain chemistry or economic motives or the interplay of evolutionary forces. So it's not that, you know, these things aren't important or that they're not teaching us important things about humanity and human experience, but what they do, both of these views, that kind of perspectivism and then that, you know, you can know everything you need to know just through the study of genes or economic forces, et cetera, is that it really rejects any claim of, as I was saying, an objective foundation, an enduring foundation of what truth is or morality or something like that. And that is contrary, really, to the Catholic way of thinking. But that thought does prevail on our campuses.
And I think also, for students today applying to whatever college throughout the United States, I think the Catholicity is the last in their minds when they apply to college.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's something I definitely will talk about a little bit later, but one of the things that happens with the Catholic institution, and, you know, Mark Roche actually talks about this a little bit, and he says that, you know, Catholic institutions, and I think Buckley talks about it in his book too, in an effort to compete with the secular institutions, mm-hmm. whether they're the big research mm-hmm. RD1 institutions or the smaller liberal arts, you know, they promote the various academic programs or co-curricular mm-hmm. programs or athletic programs or the physical plant, et cetera, and they're talking about that, but they're not talking about their identity and how that Catholic identity, you know, distinguishes them from the secular institution. And that's something Roche talks about, and he says there is a need for the Catholic University to emphasize both its excellence as an academic intellectual institution as well as its Catholic identity. And I think that the Catholic identity really... I want to say that in the face of what I was talking about before, those prevailing views of, let's say, subjectivism, relativism, mm-hmm. perspectivism, etc., I think that the Catholic vision of education can offer something compelling to us, because I think human beings are not really satisfied with a fragmentary, relativistic, or subjective answer or information about what it means to be human or what human experience is about. I think that there is a desire in us that to place our questions, ourselves, our desires, our concern in something larger than mm-hmm. ourselves. Mm-hmm. And we're always going to, since the beginning of time, we've been asking questions. Who am I? Where do I come from? Why is there evil? Why is there death? Why is there suffering? And I think that the Catholic intellectual tradition offers something very compelling to mm-hmm. respond to those mm-hmm. kinds of questions. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that we have the answers. I'm not talking about fixed answers. I think, though, that the Catholic intellectual tradition offers so much rich thinking for us to think about how do we answer those questions. And I don't know if our Catholic universities, I mean, I think Sacred Heart does, and I'll talk about that later, but they don't underscore, here's our Catholic identity, here's our Catholic character, our Catholic vision. And it can be a very compelling vision mm-hmm. in the response to that more sort of what I would call fragmentary, relativistic kind of way of looking at the world.
And probably parents feel that a Catholic institution is more like a safe haven for their children versus a lay or a secular university.
Well, I have a lot of parents who, you know, whatever level of Catholic faith that they may have, they will come to me, especially sometimes when I used to do the orientations to the parents, et cetera, and they'd come afterwards and they would ask me, you know, well, you know, what do you have here that promotes, you know, Catholic thought, et cetera. And so many are interested. I don't have numbers on that, so I can't tell you if it's 1% or 0.001% that are But I can tell you that I'll always have a handful of parents who will come up and be, you know, of, you know, interested in that. Or some parents who are, you can see that they've dedicated, their students will come from Catholic high school, they've gone to Catholic elementary school, and so clearly in that family there is some commitment to Catholic education. Mm-hmm. And you know, we do have those students. What I think is important, though, is that when those students come to us and we introduce them to the Catholic intellectual tradition, they will tell us that, wow, this is so much broader and deeper than what I was taught in high school or elementary school. I didn't realize that, you know, because I think in elementary and high school, I'm not familiar, but they're taught perhaps a little bit more narrow vision of what Catholic thought is. And when they come to the college, we try to introduce them to all the great thinkers mm-hmm. and all of the complexities that these great thinkers, like Augustine, right, like Thomas Aquinas, mm-hmm. Like Dante, like, you know, Thomas Merton, Dorothy Day, that they had while they were on their life journey. And the students are really stunned by that in a positive way.
Mm. Like when I think about my own Catholic faith, in that is that not the uncertainties, plenty of uncertainties because we are at this particular level of our existence, but an awareness of a great security, of a great understanding that if I am loved by something bigger than I am, that my self-worth, my self, my dignity, my sense of even purpose in life, is something that comes from something higher than me. It isn't arbitrary. It's because a bunch of people decided, hey, you're a great guy or you're worthy of love. You know, when I think of Hitler, who had to make decisions, and we could expand his thought, of course, in many different directions, but made decisions about people who are unworthy of life.
Right.
And I think of the trends today, not only in the suicides that are so common, but also in just the outlook.
I think the way you put that, Father, is really quite eloquent, if I may say, because I think that that's the vision that Catholic intellectual thought can offer them, that there's something bigger that, you know, created in love, if you will. And that doesn't, by the way, say that evolution didn't take place.
I just
wanted to be really clear about that. But that, and so my life, my universe, has sacred meaning. And I think you're right, that's what I meant when I said that the Catholic vision has something really compelling to offer to our youth, our college students, and to all of us, really. And that, even if it's not security in the sense that, okay, I have all of the answers. Why is there suffering? All right, the book of Job does not give us a good answer to why is there suffering, right? It says, I mean, if we read the book of Job, you know, God makes an arrangement with, you know, the Satan is what it is called, and because the Satan wants to test Job's faith, right? And at the end, you know, when Job says to God, yeah, I'm a good man. Why, you know, why did this happen? You know, God says to him, I created the earth. Where were you when I created everything, right? But it's not really a satisfactory answer. Mm. But our students get, we teach them the book of Job, and they get that, well, suffering, you know, is part of life. But perhaps in that context, that vision that you're talking about, it has more meaning. It has more value, or that I can understand it better. The innocent will suffer. The innocent will be victims of terrible things. We see that all the
and
time.
And it's regardless of your religion. It's inherent to humanity.
Correct.
Because everybody experiences suffering.
But to just say that it's meaningless, I think that's the difference. And so, you know, what you were saying then is really an eloquent way, I think, of what the Catholic vision has to offer. And so I think what we need to do in our universities is they need to put Catholic intellectual life and conversation at the center of the university and show how that intellectual Catholic intellectual thought is able to grapple with all the important questions of our contemporary world, all the fundamental big questions. And you need to do that, though. You need scholars from across the disciplines who aren't only expert in their own field, but who are willing, if you will, to take on this cross-disciplinary challenge of conversation. And that's a challenge for Catholic universities. But when you have that intellectual academic component, and you have then obviously the campus ministry, the liturgical life of the institution, and many other components that foster sort of the Catholic identity and Catholic character of the institution, when you have all of that working together. But at the heart of it, you've got to have that intellectual life. I really do think that. Mm. Yes, to answer that question, I think Buckley is suggesting to us, really, that Catholic universities have a lot of work to do, that we have to define who we are more distinctly, and we have to, make efforts to have Catholic intellectual thought prevail at our universities across. And again, I'm not talking about catechism. I'm not talking about catechesis. I'm not talking about proselytizing. I am talking about the great intellectual thinkers who themselves had questions, who had ambivalences, but were willing to tackle those head on. I think you see Pope Francis doing that very well.
Well, and even when you read Thomas Aquinas, every philosophy course, regardless if it's Catholic or not, studies Thomas Aquinas.
And his whole theory of natural law, right? Our whole Western society's idea of law, moral law, natural law, I mean, is very much based on his thinking. So that's what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about catechism or catechesis or, proselytizing. I'm talking about, really rigorous intellectual engagement.
And especially in today's world where we have so many religions coming together and so many immigrants and people of different faiths integrating into our universities,
into
our Catholic universities.
Right. We need that. All the more. And we need to be able to, you talked about Thomas Aquinas. So who did Thomas Aquinas talk to? He talked to the great Jewish philosopher, Maimonides. Mm-hmm. He talked to the Arab leaders and philosophers and thinkers of his time. Why did he do that? Because he wanted, he had Catholic intellectual thought, if you will. I mean, let's see, how does it engage with the world of Islam? How does it engage with the Jewish world? How do we have conversations together, even if he had his own opinions about which one was right or wrong? The fact was, he was willing to engage in that intellectual discourse, and that's exactly the kind of thing, really, that I'm talking about here. So I think that's what Buckley and Mark Roche and I think the other instances that I mentioned of people who are saying, like that conference at Loyola, I hope I get my paper accepted and I'm able to go there. Well, because they're saying, what makes the Catholic institution distinct? And I think we have to think about that.
Mm-hmm. Well, when we think about, of course, to reach or to create an identity within the environment of a university, I would think, like Sacred Heart, one aspect might be the grouping of intellectuals discussing these tremendously profound thoughts and ideas, and also in the classroom. But how does the university create that atmosphere, create an outreach to students who are coming from so many different backgrounds?
Well, that's something I was going to talk about a little bit later in our next interview, was really how we do that at Sacred Heart.
Actually here. How would you suggest that this idea, this pursuit of truth, and I think of Jesus saying, I am the way and the truth and the life, and creating in our Lord I can root my existence, my hopes, my dreams, and everything else. Does the idea of the university as a place where people do go to learn how to make a good living, is part of Catholic identity to say, well, we also want to live a good life? Is it something that the university will create in this idea of supporting this idea of freedom, which you mentioned with Aquinas, of reaching out to pluralistic world, which is almost prescient. He almost knew the United States.
Right, absolutely.
But How do we therefore promote not so much validity, but the great value of Catholic thought?
You mean Catholic thought and academic freedom? First and foremost, and even Pope John Paul II in his encyclical Fides et Ratio, right, he says the goal of the university is always the pursuit of truth, right? Mm-hmm. And which is the main goal mm-hmm. of a university, whether it's Catholic right. or Jewish or whatever university mm-hmm. or secular, it doesn't matter. It's got to be the pursuit of truth. And that pursuit of truth has got to foster open, transparent, mm-hmm. intellectual, rigorous inquiry wherever it leads. And, you know, a lot of times the Catholic, the question has come up, well, can the Catholic institution have both its Catholic identity and academic freedom? And the answer to that question is absolutely yes. Absolutely yes. And I say that one of the important claims of the Catholic intellectual tradition is the compatibility of faith and reason,
mm-hmm.
yeah. right?
Yeah.
It's always been the case, Anselm, Augustine, Aquinas, no matter. The pursuit of truth is based on our human reason, and that's always compatible with our faith. As I said, Pope Paul John II, he insists on the in Fides et Ratio, he says, faith and reason are compatible, and they're the cornerstone of the Catholic intellectual tradition. Mm-hmm. So, some examples. For example, look at Pope Francis's Laudato Si, his great, wonderful work on the climate and the environment. Right? His analysis of the environment is scientifically first rate. I mean, if you read the reviews of that by the biologists and the environmentalists who read that, they said he was like spot on, absolutely stellar, right? So here he is, the scientific analysis, and he connects his analysis of the climate, of the environment, and economics with faith. And so there is prime example of how faith and reason go together. Another interesting one to me is, you know, the Big Bang Theory, mm. how the universe
yep.
began, right? Who's one of the original thinkers, original theorists about that?
Mm.
In 1927, it was a Belgian priest.
Mm.
He was the one who discovered and theorized about the Big Bang, an example of faith and reason going together. Today, who's one of the foremost American research astronomers is a Jesuit brother who heads the Vatican Observatory.
Mm.
So it shows that the Catholic intellectual tradition, you know, from Aquinas on up, has always really prized rigorous, open intellectual inquiry, and that is the basis of academic freedom. You must always have academic freedom, which is the basis of university scholarship, research, and teaching. But because the Catholic university prizes the pursuit of truth, prizes the compatibility of faith and reason, it's like a no-brainer. Of course faith and reason go together, academic freedom and absolute academic rigorous research.
Well,
so even with our what you're saying, this pluralistic, you know, different religious faiths, different perspectives, the research of science, etc., but the Catholic tradition can embrace all of that.
Well, Professor Lawrence, thank you for being with us today. We're going to explore this more. I hope our listeners have learned a great deal. Take good care. Join us again next week.